I'm Kirk Harnack. On This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tarr and I get a tour of Cox Media in Tampa. Chief Studio Engineer Dylan Scott shows us some of his 13 studios. On This Week in Radio Tech, next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 115, recorded February 8th, 2012. 13 studios and an engineer. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Telos Systems and the new VX Voice over IP multi-studio talk show system. On the web at telos-systems.com/VX. It's time for This Week in Radio Tech. Hi there, I'm Kirk Harnack. So glad that you are along. This is the show where we talk about radio technology. And that includes a lot of stuff, as we're about to see. You know, more than just tubes and audio consoles and DAV and step attenuators and transmitters. There's a lot of stuff in between all that. A lot of new technologies, too. Joining me on the show, one of my favorite co-hosts. Okay, well, they're all favorite. But here we go. My favorite one from Wisconsin. It's Chris Tarr.
Spoken like a true parent. Oh, I love you all in your own special way. Well, thank you, Kirk. I am the director of engineering for Intercom's radio stations in Madison and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I'm also a contributing writer to Radio Guide magazine and also co-founder of the Virtual Engineer, which is an online broadcast engineering forum at broadcastengineering.info.
Broadcastengineering.info. Good place to set a browser or even open your set a bookmark or open your browser to that page when you get going. Open it up. All right. Yes, well, and as for me, well, my bias, my full-time employer are the folks at the Telos Alliance, Telos, Omdia, Axia, and Linear Acoustic. I've been with them for about 12 years, and I've just kind of moved jobs there. I'm now the VP of Telos Products. So working real hard with my colleague, Joe Talbot, to get some of our newer products out the door, get people happy with them. So we'll talk about one of those products during the commercial break in the show. All right, episode number 115 here, and we're recording this on the date of, February the 8th, and we're going to take a tour today. I'm very pleased to be in Tampa, Florida, and I'm at the radio stations here, a cluster of stations that's owned by Cox Media. Some great engineers here. I tell you, the Cox Media Company is a company that really believes in having strong, capable engineers at their radio stations. And this one is no exception. So I met today earlier today with Roz Clark, and today we're going to be with Dylan. Hey, Dylan, what's your last name, son? Huh? Scott. Dylan Scott is going to give us a tour of some of the studios here. So we'll be watching the chat room and see if you can ask some questions while we're rolling around. And you know, Chris Tarr, I may have to ask you to monitor the chat room because I just realized that my screen and camera will be faced away from me.
Yeah, no problem. I can do that for you.
All right. You pipe up with questions, all right?
Will do.
All right. Any quick news items, Chris, that we want to talk about? I've got maybe a couple little things to touch on.
Yeah, what you got?
Well, this article in Radio World Online, rwonline.com, by Wayne Pacena, and it's a question that we get asked to tell us from time to time. Maybe you get asked too, or you're worried about it. Should I be concerned about IPv6 yet?
Yes. I not overly concerned, but obviously, you know, that's the way the world's turning. So, you know, at this point, pretty much, you know, you got to be thinking ahead, and everything you install ought to be IPv6 capable, compatible, you know, and pretty much anything you're going to get now does. Of course, that also extends out to whoever's doing your providing for your internet services, your networking services. They also had better be on the ball with IPv6. Now, is it something you got to worry about tomorrow? No, but it is coming, and you might as well start preparing for it now.
Man, there's a bunch of IPv6 addresses available. It's a lot. It's a big number.
There's a couple hundred for sure. Yeah,
like It's like a Brazilian. It's a lot.
Somebody just asked, whatever happened to IPv5? I don't know. It's kind of like WD-39. What was that like, you know?
Yeah. Or Formula 408.
Right.
Didn't take off. Actually, they're on an episode of Security Now, Steve Gibson does a lot of great explanations about IPv6 and how his company, Gibson Research Corporation at grc.com, how they got some IPv6 addresses, and they were just issued a block of 64,000 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, of course, if they give them away like candy, aren't we going to end up being in the same boat and running out of them at some point?
Well, no, I don't remember the number, but it's some astronomical amount of numbers available at IPv6. So I think you're safe handing them out like that.
I want an IPv6 address for every hair on my head.
Well, you know, one of the things they're talking about is, you know, in the future, pretty much every device you're going to have in your house is going to have an IP address. So that's kind of how the spec is designed. Because, you know, at some point, everything's going to have an IP address. It's getting that way now.
You know, I think there's a book. I think it's the Bible that says the hairs on your head are numbered. Well, you know, with IPv6, it might be true.
And right. The day is coming.
Yeah, the day's coming. That's right. All right. On the subject of IPv6, if you go to RW Online and check out this article by Wayne Pacena, I hope I'm saying his name right, there is a webinar coming up offered by SBE about transitioning to IPv6 and what that might look like, what the implications might be for broadcasters. Now, in my opinion, if you're behind a NAT router, and basically about everybody is, IPv6 may not be affecting you in your internal operation whatsoever, at least not anytime soon, and maybe not anytime forever. Now, of course, there may be a time when you want to be able to access every device remotely, and at which time IPv6, you know, could be pretty helpful there. Also, my colleague Joe Talbot says that he's kind of looking forward to IPv6 because we might eventually then be able to get real multicast across the internet. I'm sure there's more things that have to happen besides just going to a new numbering scheme, but the routers that make that possible may make multicast a bigger reality. So Joe and I are going to talk about that, not tonight on tonight's show, but I want to get more educated on that because that would really be a very interesting advantage for anybody who wants to stream content across the internet and have, you know, 2 or 2 million people view, watch, be entertained by it, consume that content. Multicast would certainly be a really efficient way to get that done. You think?
Absolutely. I agree.
All right. So this article gives some information about the SBE webinar on IPv6. So I encourage you to check that out. Now, speaking, the other little item in the news, speaking of webinars, in yesterday's Radio World Online, an article, the first look at the spring NAB engineering sessions. Now, some folks Joe Talbot, Frank Foti, and certainly folks in responsible positions at various technology companies with broadcasting, we've been kind of aware of what we're going to talk about during these engineering sessions. But there's a good article here written by Paul McLean in Radio World. He's the editor-in-chief there about the sessions that are coming up. He says, if you want an intense 6-day tutorial on the state of radio broadcast engineering, go to the Spring NAB show. There is certainly plenty to be had there from IPTV. Steve Fluker is going to be there, as well as Milford Smith, talking about advancements in radio technology. And NPR Labs will be making some presentations there. Frank Foti will be there. My colleague Joe Talbot will be giving a really interesting kind of a hands-on case study of implementing SIP telephony at broadcast stations. So some like 5 real-world stories of implementing SIP telephony, which we're all going to end up going to at some point. Every day, check out this article. It lists every day what's going on, gives you a preview of that, these sessions at NAB. If you can go, I think it's really worth your while. And if you can't go, well, you can read the papers later. Most of these folks put the papers on their own websites because they're proud of the research they did and what they ended up having to say. All right. Chris, this is the point where you get to talk for a minute.
Fantastic. Well, you know, I actually have something that I read recently that we're going to talk about here. We'll get the chat room's response to that. Fred Jacobs, a well-known radio programmer, put in his blog the other day talking about CES and HD radio showing up in cars, and how he thinks that although the technology is still fairly new, based on what he's seeing with the radios, if we reach the full potential, it has the potential to be some do some pretty cool things. And I agree. And it's been something that I've been saying all along about HD radio. And, you know, a lot of people are, you know, talking about HD radio is dead. It's not going anywhere. You know, yeah, okay. We had some missteps there in the start. But if you take a look at some of these radios that are coming out of these new cars and how they're working with HD radio, they're fantastic. There's some really good opportunities going on here. And, well, Good Sound has a good question, which is what's been the holdup with HD radio? And, you know, it's hard to say. I think part of it was, you know, we got it out there. And again, this is opinion. I don't speak for my employer. But from what I can see as an engineer, it looks like, you know, it got out there and it kind of just, we didn't know what to do with it. Was it going to be all about audio quality? Was it going to be all about multicasting? Even for a while there, we were talking about conditional access where, you know, we'd have a channel that you could pay for events, like a pay-per-listen kind of thing. All of those things kind of got tossed around. And I think in the process of that, we kind of lost our way as to really what's it about. Because there weren't people saying, you know what, I need a new radio. So we had to come up with something to drive people to listen to the radio. And it sounds like kind of where we're going with this is things like multicasting is really, I think, going to be the killer app with HD radio. And basically what Fred was saying is if you take a look at these radios and how they're integrated with Pandora, with satellite radio and other devices, HD radio looks really good on these new devices. So I'm pretty excited where things are going, but it comes back to my one rant that I'm going to rant about here quickly, which is nothing ruins a great technology like poor implementation. And he touched on that a little bit in that these radios have the capability of showing album art, a title and artist, and all of those things that HD radio is capable of doing. Now, as broadcasters, we have to start sending that data out because people are going to try these radios and test drives and things like that. And if it falls flat, you know, that's what they're going to talk about. And so as broadcasters and as engineers, you know, we really need to take the lead and move forward with this and make sure that the technology is working well and doing what it's supposed to do and making sure that you know, that when you turn on the HD2, that it's there, that the time alignment is good. You know, I try to get within a few frames on the audio. So, you know, I thought that was a real interesting conversation from Fred Jacobs. And actually, one of the first times I think I've seen a programmer actually kind of step behind HD radio and go, you know what, I see something here. And I've been saying that for a long time. Now, some of the people in the chat room here talking about AMHD, and you're right. There's some issues there with HD that could be better. You know, FMHD, I think in particular with its multicasting possibilities, I think are great. I think that once the radios get out there, and that is a, you know, it's a slow adoption, it's evolution rather than revolution. But I think once that gets out there, and those radios start to get out a little more into the mass market. And with all the new car lines now, you know, it's pretty easy to buy a new car with HD radio. I think we're going to start seeing it take off. The other comments here in the chat room about that, you know, the sound quality, there is a discussion about that. Obviously, you have a limited number of bits, and the more that you split those bits up for multicasting, you know, the audio quality does go down. And you know, I think that's kind of it's a trade-off, and it's something that you're going to have to put a little thought into. And that's really important with HD radio when you're planning this implementation is, you know, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to do more than one channel? If you are, how are you going to split the bits up? How are you going to divide that up? How are you going to process it to make it sound good? Those types of things. Oh, I think I hear Kirk coming back here. Are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
All right, we're fantastic.
Here, here. Oh, I'm get over here. Howdy.
All right, there we go. We got you.
There we go. So this is Dylan Scott, and Dylan is chief engineer here?
Chief engineer, studio chief.
Studio chief engineer at Cox Media in Tampa, Florida. And we're in the 107.3 control room.
WXGL, the Eagle.
All right.
This is a studio that was built probably in the mid to late 80s. Was originally built by Susquehanna Radio. This is back when they actually built studios the right way. And there's not a square corner, kind of a little more difficult to see on the screen, but there's not a square corner in this room, nor is there any flat surfaces.
Oh, and this is for sound?
Sound absorption. The roof is on a slant. The walls are on a slant. And really captures the any of the sound properties of the room and makes it a very quiet room. The ceiling itself is actually compressed and has can be lifted up to an inch and a half in the center for compression. So this room was really built for some abuse and some loud music, so to speak.
Cool.
The main console is a Harris NetWave 24 channel, fully populated with a full router system in the rack room. With we use the Maestro automation system.
Yay, Maestro! Sorry.
All right, Chris, are you using Maestro there?
Yes, I am. I'm a fan of Maestro.
Gotcha.
Excuse me.
Well, if you ever get stuck, call Dylan. If Dylan, you ever get stuck, call Chris.
We'll do that.
What's this little panel over here that says air at the bottom of
it? This is our air monitor. So if they want to check of any of the other, this is a six-station cluster, and if they want to check any of the other studios of what's happening, they can punch. It's almost like a remote line selector and listen to the air monitors from each studio, depending on who's actually populated in the studio at the time.
Gotcha. And not only does the button light up, but it shows you the names of them up top, doesn't it?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. 94.9 air, 97.1 air. And when that says air, you're picking that up back off air, right?
That is correct. That is an air signal, off air signal.
So that would mean they'd be delayed quite a bit because of HD.
Between 8 seconds for an HD delay, some stations for even more so for profanity delays. By the time you talk to it coming out on the air, it may be anywhere between 8 seconds to 38 seconds to a full minute, depending on how much your profanity delays are.
Hey, some of our viewers on this show are broadcast engineers, and others are not. So why don't you run us through a little bit of this console? This is a good-looking console. It's made by Harris, right?
That is correct. It's a 24-channel console. It goes back to a little bit more of the cookie-cutter, more default standard console of your microphones, your input sources, your remotes, your phones, and your air monitors. We kind of color code the faders for the non-broadcasters just so the jocks in the middle of a show can very easily recognize, hey, I need to turn the mic up, or hey, I need to fire off a particular source, or I need to turn something up louder. It's a quick and easy visual representation they don't need to stop talking.
You've got a big label maker sign here. Program one feeds on air. Yep. Program two feeds Maestro.
That is correct.
That's a real common setup at radio stations. They'll have program one being the thing that really, really matters.
That is going to be your primary. If that's not on the air, then you're probably not on the air.
And that meter there, in fact, shows program one and shows the LEDs bumping there.
Yep. Okay. And this is actually a reflective surface. Yeah. It's reverse mirrored. So the meters are actually built into the top of the console and with the mirrored backdrop, almost like a heads-up display.
All right. Cool. So now some things are in program one, some are in program two and program three and program four. So how does an engineer typically set up a console with regard to these different program buses? What uses do you have for these?
Different program buses, maybe if they want to record a commercial off the air into your automation system. They'll put it into program two and take it out of program one, so they're actually not on the air.
Mm-hmm.
Program three may feed a offline editor, like a shortcut or even Adobe Audition, so that they can chop up and edit. Previously, it used to be even like a reel-to-reel machine for any of the older broadcasters that are out there that do remember those. We actually only have one reel-to-reel machine left in the building, which we'll actually take a look at. But different buses will feed different elements within the studio.
Awesome. I noticed there's one more bus there called Offline. Tell me what that is.
Offline is almost a sub bus that will feed phone hybrids or like a shortcut editor where it's assignable either on or off for remotes or IFB, something that you would quickly turn on or off, almost like a mix minus.
Okay. All right. Is it, people ever call it like a talk around bus or
a talkback bus?
A talk back bus.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
It's basically your most commonly used mix minus.
Gotcha. Now, you know, I've used a lot of automation systems before, but I've never used this Maestro. So they, it looks like it goes by the paradigm of having like three card decks.
Correct. Okay. That's just a visual representation. We can change that. We wanted the comfort level when we first installed this, actually more than 10 years ago, that the jocks were more familiar with running a cart deck or a CD deck. And they wanted the representation of, okay, I know how to run this. I'm more familiar with it. I'm more comfortable with it. I'm not going to be taken outside of the box.
Gotcha.
So they created a GUI with that actually represented cart machines.
In a few minutes, we're going to go look at the computers that run all this back in the back room.
Yep.
Okay. What else is in here? There's a 360 systems box over there. Jocks seem to love these things for quick editing, yeah?
Quick editing. There's really only two kind of standards, 360 systems shortcut or Vox Pro are becoming the industry standards. It's one of the only single appliance editors. Somebody that can really use this and is very familiar with it can chop up a piece of audio almost instantaneously and get running with it.
A few weeks ago, we did a show where we talked about EAS and the big national test that didn't go so well.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So is that what this box is here?
That is that box. Every station all broadcast needs to have their own individual EAS box, at least in our facility. And these are the newer Sage NDX. Compared to the older machines, these don't have the printers that everybody was so... Yeah. So wonderfully accustomed to.
Yeah. All right. And below that, we have some dead-on CD cart players.
Yeah.
Blast from the 80s?
Very much a blast in the 80s, actually. So some of these are probably circa 1980 to 85, 86 or so. Very rarely used in the studios, more so in case of an emergency.
Hey, Chris Tarr, I should check in with you. How's this video looking? Am I moving around too much or is it okay?
No, it's looking good. It's looking good. Okay.
Well, I want to look at the secret stuff behind the smoke glass panel down here. Now, we may not be able to see this real well because of reflection, but what you got down here? Oh, there's an Ethernet switch.
More so, the Ethernet switch is controls all the router heads that are within the Vistamax board, just so I can get network sources in and out of the room.
Yeah.
The little Behringer that you see below that is literally there for headphone processing.
Ooh.
Because of the delay, most jocks need to hear something other than a dry program feed.
Yeah.
So we feed that through something minimally processed, something that's a little more compressed, something that's not going to make your ears bleed. It makes them feel a little bit more comfortable.
You know, after hearing your voice through radio station processing for years, you really miss that. If you don't hear it, you really miss it.
That's why you see a lot of jocks go, you know, start putting a finger in their ear or so.
Yep.
The glass... The glass panel insulation, and you don't necessarily want people bumping it, kicking it, destroying it, whichever.
Right.
Also prevents a lot of people from.
Oh, we're getting a little packet loss there, Kirk. I don't know if he can hear me there. Oh, looks like we may have lost him. Uh-oh. let's see. Maybe once he gets the computer back up again, he'll be all right. So we'll hang on for just a second here to see how he does. You got to keep your computer up, Kirk. Don't bring it down so low because you're losing the signal.
Yeah. All right.
Gotcha. All right. Go ahead.
So I didn't know how much we missed. The plexiglass panel is more so just because it's an under-counter installation. And, you know, if there's knobs to be had, buttons to be pushed, jocks are going to push them. It's more to protect themselves and the equipment from them touching and adjusting touching.
Gotcha. All right. What's next on our tour? Is there anything else we ought to look at in here, or should we head on down the hallway?
Just a couple notes about these rooms. Modern broadcast facilities are run very operator low, I guess you want to call it. We run on a skeleton crew so that... Our KISS method in this facility was make each of our rooms, we have six radio stations here, make each of the rooms kind of cookie cutter to where any person from any studio can go from one to the other and not be outside their comfort zone. So this studio is very similar to WDUV, to WSUN, to WHPT down the hall, where they can jump from each studio to the next and quickly troubleshoot if there is a problem.
Cool.
So
a couple of quick questions, Kirk, from the chat room. Number one is, what kind of microphones are those?
This one, I believe, is this one was an AKG. We've tried about three or four different styles in here. On the backside, I believe we have a PR. No, that's one of the new Shures. Jox, industry standard. Everybody looks at it. I want an RE20 or I want a Heil PR40. Again, it's comfort. It's a comfort level. You can process any microphone to sound good, I believe. That's my opinion. If somebody sees a brand new microphone such as this, they put their headphones on, no matter if it's different or not, it's going to sound different in their head. So you have to find that right comparison and right processing to make them sound as good as what they think they do in their ears.
So a lot of us maybe psycho...
It's psychoacoustic, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. I mean, I'm pretty partial to the Heil PR40 that I have, but I have a friend who's a voiceover artist, and we tried it with him, and it wasn't what he liked. He did better with a $2,000 Neumann mic because that's the kind of voice acting he was doing.
It's comfort level, absolutely.
I know that for Leo likes the PR40. I like the PR40. Maybe that's because they make us sound like we're on the radio. They have a nice bottom end that works well for a male voice.
Well, the PR40 and more so even the RE20 was originally designed as a kick drum microphone.
Ah, yeah.
So okay. It's meant to take a lot of abuse.
All right. How far are we from our next room? Chris, any other questions for this room?
Yes. The red circles behind you there on the wall. What are those?
Ooh, yes.
Actually, those are strobe lights. Connected to just some regular silence monitors.
So when the DJ hits the jackpot, do those light up?
There's actually six in each room because it is a six-station facility. So if any of the stations happen to go off the air or lose their signal, the strobe lights will start going off in every one of the rooms, and it looks like a dance club in here. And so they go to rush and find out which station's having the issue.
Cool. And those are all labeled, like with 94.9, 97.1, 101.5. Maybe hard to see on the camera, but those white labels tell what station is alarming.
Something that made it a little bit easier in our facility, something we've learned over the years, this is 17 years that I've been doing this, is we labeled everything by frequency. Because chances are, and other broadcast engineers can probably tell you, you're not necessarily going to be changing frequency too much. But I can't tell you how many call letter changes I've been through. So if you start,
it usually happens just the same day you put the call letters on the wall in the reception area.
Exactly.
It's typically when you change
them to the glass in the lobby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Oh, gee.
You can change formats. You can change logos. Anything else you can change. You're not necessarily going to be changing the frequency.
All right. We good for the next room, or any more questions, Chris?
No, we're good.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't know how well this is going to work, but we'll give it a try.
We're mobile video.
All right. Here we are in the Cox Media facility in Tampa, Florida, going down the hallway past the break room. There's the big coverage map. Stop there for a second. Lots of transmitters shown there. Uh-oh. Super secret combination. Ooh, what's this? Oh, the rack room.
Don't mind a bit of the mess. We do actually work in this room.
Now, we're not going to go down these hallways here, but you see there's lots of equipment down there, lots of streaming gear there. You want to go right to the big racks in the middle?
Yep.
Okay.
You can stop there and watch and circle around.
All righty. Let's pass her enough. Do you still have our signal?
Yep, we still got you.
All right, good. Well, Dylan is going to come around. Dylan Scott is here. We're, by the way, those of you just tuning in, we're at Cox Media in Tampa, Florida. Dylan Scott is the chief studio engineer, and he's giving us a tour. Now we're in the rack room, which is a big place, nice and cool in here, too.
It's cool. There's a 10-ton air conditioner. The room itself is probably a 15 by 35-foot room. There's 24 racks in here, three different power sources. I have two individual UPSs. I have a 150-kilowatt generator sitting out back for standby generator. This is pretty much the center of the room where we make all of our money. This would be my automation rack with all my automation machines. I not only have a primary and a backup for each of the studios, I also have a third unit that plays all of our HD2s. I heard some comments earlier about the HD2s. We have HD2 enabled on every one of our stations. So essentially, I'm responsible for 12 radio stations, and that's not even including our stream machines. Even our HD2s are responsible with Arbitron PPM encoders. You can pan off to the left just a little bit. PPM encoders and Sage Index EAS boxes, even for our HD2s. So they are treated internally just like a full-fledged radio station. And they have the same coverage as a regular as our regular analogs. Our automation system, just give a little bit more tech about it. I have three servers for it, a primary and two backups. The primary has almost a 2 terabyte audio surface, runs server 2008 on a very very cool green box anyway.
The Google Green Machines.
What's that, Chris?
Those are the Google Green Machines.
They are the Google Green Machines.
They are, that's right.
One time, they're the Wide Orbit Green Machines now.
Oh, right, yes, yeah, Wide Orbit now, yes.
Yeah, the little label at the top. All of our boxes were pre-built. We built them ourselves only because we wanted how robust, and we wanted parts off the shelf that we could replace in an instant. You know, whether it be power supply, whether it be RAM, whether it be hard drive, we kind of work like a pit crew here. We'll unbox it, replace what we need to, slam it back in, and we're off and running, not having to wait for a server-class box or even a four-hour response or a 24-hour response from, you know, Dell or whatever, you know, HP or whatever, insert, you know, corporate company here. We know how to build boxes. We know how to fix boxes. So that became a kind of a standard for us.
Hey, I see you've got a master clock up here. Tell us about that real quick.
The ESE Master Clock GPS clocks, I have two GPS antennas sitting on the roof, and that feeds down through Balans and feeds all of my my boards in the studios. That way I can also, I take that as a master clock to our control surfaces. I also run a network time protocol on my servers so we can tell the difference if they're matched and make sure that we're synced up even for any of our network shows.
Cool.
So it's kind of gives you two sources. You're not always relying on one thing. Always have a backup, so to speak. We can come around the back a little bit.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. This is my cross-connect wall. We use the Krone 110 blocks. A lot easier and much safer to use than your standard 66 block. It's a lot cleaner, has a little bit more density. The only thing you can't do is double punch, triple punch on the blocks. We have the feeling that if you're going to triple punch on a block like you would a 66 or so, why don't you use a distribution amp? Everything that's on this wall is actually connected with Cat 5, but it's all single pair Cat 5. I run analog, digital, and logic, low voltage, all through the same wire. And it's all balanced audio, so I don't need a drain. This facility, this room was built over 11 years ago.
Hmm.
And as you can tell, we do try to keep it pretty clean, and we're pretty proud of it.
Yeah, and now, because you used single-pair Cat 5 cable,
yep,
that has a great common mode rejection because it's twisted well.
Yep.
Yeah, and the impedance is about right for AES.
That is correct.
Digital audio too, and analog audio doesn't care about the impedance at that point.
So, nope. Okay. I can run right next to with the rejection, the isolation. I can run analog audio right next to digital audio, right next to, you know, 12 volt low voltage,
yeah,
logic or anything else like that. Everything works fine.
Very cool. Hey, there's cable trays up there. More than that. That's some neat looking wiring. Now the big gray cables, they go where?
The big gray cables that you see are the trunk cables, and they're actually what goes into the back, into the density, the center portion.
Yeah.
Of the punch blocks. So everything's distributed down, and then you've got your cross connects on the outer side.
Gotcha.
And these would all go back to racks, punch blocks, companion punch blocks in the racks, or on the bottom side, they would go down to studios so you can cross connect.
So all those go to studios?
All these go to studios.
12 of them or so, yeah?
Yep. All the top ones go to all the racks. The other thing, this being Florida, very, very important, grounding. Grounding is paramount. If you do not have, as my boss Roz would say, you don't have a good foundation, then you don't have a good facility. Grounding is paramount to make sure that everything, you don't have any potential, you don't have any ground loops. We're very, very, very proud of the grounding that we have here. Everything is common bonded, including a nice little 125-foot tower that we have on the backside of our building.
So this is a lot of wire we're looking at the backside of these racks, but there's a lot going on here. So how are the cables organized, and what do you do to keep this some semblance of order here?
Well, this one we took off the covers. As you can see on some of the other ones, we do have the covers that'll keep it a little bit nicer. The nice part about these are not your industry standard broadcast racks. We went a little bit different. I actually went with IT racks for two reasons. Number one, we could get better cable management, and also you don't have the sides, so it's more of an open frame and better airflow. So not only do we have the cable management, but now we can have high density electrical, which these are all trip light high density power strips. There are 1,200 in this room alone. 1,224 outlets just
what?
In plug.
Say it again.
1,224 outlets.
Power outlets.
Just in plug strips in this room.
And my wife doesn't like the power outlet strip I got next to the nightstand.
There's 1,200 of them in here. There's a lot of equipment in here, but I also have three sources of power in this room.
Oh.
I have two separate UPSs, and I have a generator, what we would call dirty power.
Okay.
And that's all color-coded.
Wow. Wow.
So there is a lot going on, and there's a lot of equipment.
Now, it looks like all these computers are remoted, out to KVM, out to...
We run the Avid. We've recently transferred over to an Avasent KVM so that we can get to it remotely through VPN tunnel. And it saves a lot more on some of our former Belkins, where we had a lot of the PS2, VGA, a lot of trunk cables that would take up a lot of room. So now that we've recently gone to those, it saves us a lot of room and has cleaned up our wiring a whole bunch. Wow.
Chris, how are we doing? Got any questions?
No, just a lot of people complimenting you on your work. It looks fantastic. I do have one question. I think I saw. Are you using the Studio Hub connectors in there? I thought maybe I glanced at one when you were panning the camera around in there.
I don't have any Studio Hub. All what we use within here are VistaMax router system by Harris. So that may be kind of similar to what you were seeing. But no, plenty of networking, plenty of independent switches, depending on what their job is.
Okay. Fantastic.
I'll how about we just do the commercial now since we're in here anyway? our episode tonight is brought to you by the folks at Telos, my employer, and Telos, maker of phone hybrids and phone talk show systems for years. Let's take a quick look at the Telos VX system that's in the rack up here. This is a Telos VX phone system, and I'll talk about it for a second, but then I want Dylan to describe it. The VX is a VoIP or SIP trunk based phone system, and what you have here is called the VX engine. It says OK, and there's the internal IP address. Power's on, and all's good. It's got dual redundant power supplies in it. And then being deployed to the different studios. Oh, here we go. Joe's got one. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
This is Joe Talbot. He'll be giving an NAB paper on about this facility, at least in part, at the NAB. Now, this one's dark because it's not plugged in, but
right.
Joe. Yeah.
Cordless phone.
Yeah. works great in OFF mode, doesn't
it? Exactly.
So, what does this phone do for the the announcers?
Well, this one handles 12 lines. They can route the call to the handset if they use this strip, put the call on air if they use this strip.
Ah.
There's all kinds of information about the calls and the displays here. If it was lit up, you'd see that. And
and then these buttons are soft, aren't they?
Soft keys, and those, they pop up at appropriate times depending on what you're trying to do. I mean,
yeah.
For example, if you got a call on air, it lets you switch which hybrid you're on, which fader you come in on. There's a volume control for the handset that pops up if you're on the handset. Call transfer will be there, so it's going to be an interesting.
And I want to show the nodes over here.
Sure.
If your station is a station that has Axia consoles, then you wouldn't have these nodes. But here we have they have Harris consoles, and so to tie in with the Harris consoles, we use these. They look just like Axia nodes. These are Telos branded audio nodes, and the audio to and from all the hybrids, the caller audio comes out of these, the back of these audio nodes. And they come out through RJ45 connections, which is the standard studio hub. I'll show you the back here. We're just wiring this up right now, so it's not all done. But here's the RJ45s that are in my hand. And you can terminate these out however you want, bring them to punch blocks. Or if you like, you can bring them out to XLR connectors like these. Again, these are just being wired up right now. The cables will all get managed before it's all said and done.
Makes the cutover easier.
So understand that at this facility at Cox, they had to use phone service from several different sources, right, in order to get everything they wanted on the air.
They've got a VoIP provider that we really like called Paytech. We had a really good experience with them. This was my first experience with Paytech.
Uh-huh.
And they put in a circuit for them that's dedicated to phones, and it came in SIP. There's a Cisco router back there on the wall. And VX talks to that very happily. Plus, they've also got some extensions off their PBX that come in through gateway devices.
Are those PRI or DRI? Or
well, those are just POTS.
Oh, they're POTS. They're POTS. Analog from the PBX.
Right, because it's an older TDM PBX.
Okay.
And then one of the cool things that we did here, we haven't done anyplace else yet. Well, actually, we have by now, but when we first put it in, they're actually connected to the internet, so they can make calls using, like an iPhone application or a Droid application. And talk G722 wideband on the air.
Oh, so from a G722 application,
right,
on your smartphone,
right,
you can have wideband audio,
7 kilohertz. Sounds very good.
And more is capable later on,
exactly.
But for now, 7 kilohertz audio.
And
on the station talk show phones.
You treat it like it's a regular phone call. It comes in like you push a button. The call comes in. Sounds great.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's there you go. That's the commercial for the Telos VX. Thanks to Telos for being the sponsor of this show. And if you want to know more about that, well, Joe's doing a paper at NAB about not only this station, but others as well.
Why Telos? Yeah.
I guess it's a commercial. We can say that. Stations are moving over to SIP telephony, voice over IP, whether the provider provides a dedicated circuit or over the public internet. So, shall we continue the tour just a little bit, Dylan?
We can do a little bit more.
Okay. All right, we're behind Dylan Scott here on our way out the door, past all the secret gear, and out to the hallway.
Let's, we'll go back to...
you want to go back this way first?
We'll go to a
production room. All right. Chris Tarr, are you still with us? CQ, CQ.
I am here.
Okay, good. All right. On our way to a production room. This is a big place.
This one we have to open up.
Ah.
Let's keep the talent in,
yes.
Now, the only reason that we go back into this room, this is, again, one of the original pod rooms that was created. This room, does have the Neumann mic. A little bit more of the commercial creation and creativity room. But this is the only room that actually still has the only reel-to-reel left in the building.
Wow.
This is the only one. And it does still work, barely, but it does still work. Other than that, most of our production rooms are full Pro Tools capable rooms. And you can see the industry standard would normally have the console sitting in front of the
talent. I was just going to ask you about that. Here's the talent sits here, but where's the console?
Console's off to the side.
Yeah. What's that about?
Well, how much work do they really do mixing stuff within a console? They don't. Everything is computer based now. So your primary mode of control is going to be on a computer with a mouse or a trackball.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So the console really takes a secondary seat.
So it looks like in here the console is off to the side. Yep. We have great monitors. These are some Tannoy Reveal monitors.
Some near field monitors.
They sound great. You've got an expensive microphone here. Yep. And then I realize it's not turned on right now, or it's in screensaver, or power save. But yeah, two screens with Pro Tools here.
That is correct.
Okay. And then I'll be private screen for the automation
to dub stuff in. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So this is, of course, you're not on air from this room. Not an air room at all.
Nope.
It's meant for only creative production work.
Correct. Now, because of the way, again, always have a backup, this room can go on the air during an emergency. If one of the other studios could fail, we could easily patch this room in and run its automation system for a radio station if need be.
Can we look at some of the rack equipment?
Sure.
So let's see. We started with the reel-to-reel. This is a Revox? Yeah, Revox PR99. That was one of the last ones they made.
That was one of the last ones they made.
I remember B77s.
Yep.
Yeah, and what was the A model? A something?
I didn't see that one.
Wow. Okay, so in the next rack, we have an Avalon vacuum tube something.
It's a vacuum tube processor for the mic processor for the Neumann.
Uh-huh.
Is a pretty good match. One of our former production directors, again, in his head, this is what he liked, this is what he bought, and that's what we matched up together.
But below that is the radio station industry standard.
Of one of them, the 528E processor for the secondary mic for a co-host or a second talent that would be in here to record as well.
Gotcha. Do people still use cassettes?
Very, very rarely. Again, this is along the same lines as the reel-to-reel. If somebody wants to dub something off or they really want to, listen to an air check or whatever it may be, some people still do use cassette tapes. Exactly. A lot of hissing, a lot of noise floor. Much the same as a DAT machine.
Oh, that's a DAT machine.
Yep.
Wow. Wow.
Yep.
Above that is a Yamaha SPX-90.
Yep.
And, man, I installed one of those like in 1987.
You see, this is going back in time this one. And much like the Eventide 3000 above it.
Yeah,
all the outboard gear that was here was originally installed and was used within this room until the jocks or the production directors would become familiar with the Pro Tools and all the plugins and everything that they could do, internally on their production rather than having to outboard it.
Okay. So this gear, the Harmonizer, the SPX-90, that stuff doesn't get used much anymore.
No.
Okay. It's all done in Pro Tools now.
It's all done in Pro Tools.
Okay. We have a couple CD players. I imagine there's still production music distributed.
There's production music. There's a whole bunch directly behind the camera right now. And also a mini disc player.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
Well, I thought this would be a production, but it's also a little walk down memory lane.
A little museum for you.
Maybe a little dark over here, but here's what a typical well-equipped radio station has for production music. Sound effects, sound ideas, a whole CDs full of Hanna-Barbera sound effects. If you really need a woo-woo-woo-woo-woo.
Or a couple of Fred Flintstones in there as well. You'll find it there.
Very good bonk.
Yeah, bonk. All right. Well, are we about done with our tour?
Pretty much with the tour.
All right. Chris, any chat room questions about a production room?
What model Neumann mic is that? Is number one?
I'm sure it's expensive. It's the expensive one.
They're all expensive.
Yeah.
P46 or P48?
P48.
All right.
Okay, P48.
I'm sure that's a...
Let me see what else here. I'm kind of scrolling through here to get some of the questions here. Do you guys have any way to book production studios, or is it just there's somebody in there most of the day?
They come at a pretty high commodity because we do have four full-time production directors. But if something, something outboard is needed, they can probably contact the production department directly and they can book something if it is needed, either after hours or even on weekends. We can sometimes make accommodations.
Fantastic. And then somebody wanted to know, how many studios do you have in your facility?
13 studios total. I have six on-air studios, six production rooms, and a kind of a news booth dub center.
Wow. So what kind of audio storage do you have? What kind of drive space on your servers are you looking at for all your audio?
My primary automation server is running a 2 terabyte RAID 5 array.
Wow. Fantastic. That is unbelievable.
Here's another little bit difference with Maestro compared to some of the other automation systems is all of our audio is run 16-bit linear.
Oh.
It's not compressed. It's not MP3.
We do that with our Maestro system as well. Yeah.
It does sound much better on the air, and you can actually tell a difference when you do compare them to some of the competition. That being said, with 12 radio stations, essentially, I'm running about 60%, 65% load on that 2 terabyte server.
Oh, wow.
So I do have a little bit of room to grow.
Wow, fantastic. Now, are you running Pro Tools on a Mac, or are you running it on a PC?
There are no Macs in our broadcast facility whatsoever. All the Pro Tools and everything are run strictly on PC-based.
Okay. Yeah.
I think the computer that's making the Skype right now is the only Mac in the building.
I have nothing against Macs. I do have an iPhone and I do have an iPad. Unfortunately, in our business and our business world, it makes better sense for us to use PC-based. Why? Because we have them everywhere, and it makes a whole lot easier for us to repair and to support them.
I got tired of holding the laptop.
I saw that.
we're not too far from the end of our show. We've gone almost an hour now between our chit-chat at the beginning and the great tours that we've had. Dylan, one question that I get from engineers is, how do you get started in broadcast engineering? It used to be that there were schools, and it seemed like there was just a lot more interest. Now it seems as though there's fewer jobs and less interest generally. But people like you, you've got such a broad range of experience from analog audio and lots of techniques there into digital, into networking, and your big Harris system.
Yep.
And the IT work that you do. How do you get into this?
It's a little bit different for broadcast engineering. I can pretty much honestly say I'm probably the youngest chief within Cox Media Group. But that being said, I started actually behind the microphone.
Oh.
But I did go to school for computer engineering. A little bit more history about myself is while I was on air doing every shift possible on the radio, automation systems started coming out.
Mm.
Guess what? Mm-hmm. If, unless you were the top 5%, your job was being eliminated by a computer. Well, I had computer knowledge, so I learned how to fix them. The best way for computer engineering, broadcast engineering, a lot of things are going IT-based now. You have to have a love for and passion for radio, for music. And if you know how to run computers, you can definitely get a step into that system. Most of the equipment that's coming out now isn't your components. It's not your component repair. It's not your tubes. It's more of more along the lines of a board replacement or a computer repair or a software update or a firmware update, which computer engineers and people more knowledgeable about computers are going to be more apt to do than some of the other engineers that are more apt with RF or tubes or of that nature. So the swing of the industry is definitely becoming more of the IT and computer-based side.
Well, Chris, how's the chat room going? Any questions there before we wrap it up?
No, I'm not seeing a whole lot here going on. One question was, I got to find out now. How much of the audio chain is still in analog versus digital?
My entire audio chain from the time they talk on the microphone, once it hits the processor into the board, is digital. From the board all the way to the transmitter site is completely digital.
And that would be even the EAS? Is there a...
EAS is now digital.
Ah,
yep. Okay. The air chain is completely digital.
Okay. That used to be a weak... if you wanted to be all digital, EAS used to be a weak point. You had to used to go to analog to just path through the EAS box.
Right. Create a relay package or something else like that that would switch it from a digital to analog or a sample converter. Correct.
But that's why I use the new digital EAS boxes. So
correct.
You don't have to do that conversion.
That is correct.
To analog.
Yep.
Wow. And now your phone system in more of the rooms here is completely digital. If somebody calls you with a cell phone or a VoIP phone.
Yep.
That's a virtual four-wire digital.
That is correct.
All the way here.
A lot of problems with even some of the other, with the phone system, some of the old analog two-wire systems, is you had a problem trying to balance the audio between what your caller audio was coming in and your mic audio that was going out. And you'll sometimes hear it, even on some of the older phone systems, if you get a very loud caller, you'll get almost like a spaceship, kind of a warbling sound, which has always been a thorn in a lot of broadcast engineers' side. With the new VX system and being the SIP system and the four wire, you have the independent processing going both ways and completely eliminates all that isolation.
Yep.
So it's going to, hopefully it's going to be very, very, very nice for a lot of my talk shows.
Cool. Dylan, thank you very much for the tour.
Thank you very much.
Especially on the short notice. We barged in here about 4:35 o'clock this afternoon and met Dylan and said, Dylan, can we do a TV show from your studios? Sure, I'll help out. What do you need? So, it turned out he's the star of the show. So thanks very much, everybody. I appreciate it. Chris, anything else before we have to sign off?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Hey, I want to let you know that this program, our show, is brought to you by Telos. If you want to check them out, go to telos-systems.com. We showed you the Telos VX on tonight's show, and the VX is a SIP-based phone system. You can get your SIP trunks from any number of different providers, or you can take PRI or POTS and turn that into SIP using a third-party gateway product. We recommend ones from Patton, but there are other ones as well that you can use, or get SIP out of your own PBX system. Check it out on the web at telos-systems.com/VX. Hey, thanks everybody for participating in the show. We got a giveaway to do, though. We need to, I'm going to need you to think of a random number here in just a moment. Chris, you vamp for just a minute here. I'm going to see how many retweets, people retweeting we got here on the show. So let me count them up here real quick.
All right. Very good.
Let's see. You go right ahead, dude. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. All right. Random number between 1 and 29.
Let's go 19.
19. And I got to count 19. 19. All right. Hang on. Here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Isn't this great television programming? 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Looks like our winner is, wait a minute. Oh, that wasn't a retweet. That was a follow. Here's a retweet. Okay. Our winner is, I can't pronounce this. All right. Dude's name is Vaibhav Sechi. And he is Vaibhav1203 on Twitter. So I hope I got your name right, Vaibhav, V-A-I-B-H-A-V, 1203 on Twitter. Congratulations to you. You've won an Omnia AXE, and I'll be contacting you on Twitter, or you can send me a little line. Yes?
A quick question we're getting from the chat room real quickly is, what are you using for an STL for your stations?
Ooh, we use Harris HD Links. It's the new version of HD Links that use the same cards as they use on the Interplex. So it's uncompressed audio, 44.1, uncompressed going digitally for STLs now.
Is this over a T1 type circuit or something?
No, nope, this is a microwave.
Oh, microwave, okay.
Microwave STL, yep.
All right, cool, thank you.
Do you have backup STLs?
Our primary mode of transmission for most of the stations is a T1 using the Interplex STL gear or the Express. The backup mode is the common microwave STLs with HD links and some CD links.
Okay. Combination of gear dedicated for that purpose. Any more questions?
Fantastic.
All right. Thanks for retweeting the show. We sure appreciate everybody. And stay tuned, I guess, for our next episode next week. Our guest is supposed to be, we've had him on before, and you really liked him, so we're going to bring him back because he's a very smart man. It is Greg Oganowski of Modulation
Index.
Modulation Index. And he also is a consultant for Orban. So Greg is going to be our guest next week. Looking forward to that. We'll see you guys next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.